is the Relevant Podcast.
It's episode 1021, and it's the Relevant Podcast here in Orlando. I'm back. I'm your host, Cameron Strang. And joining me from Loverland, Virginia, is Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Austin, Texas, author, speaker, podcaster, Jamie Ivey.
Hey, guys.
And from Nashville, Tennessee, artist, producer, and mogul, Derek Miner.
Hello, Ski.
Well, hey, we just passed Thanksgiving. We are officially right in the throes of Christmas. So that is why this entire episode, you guys will be hearing Christmas music and all the breaks. This is how we kick it off every year, is finally it's okay to listen to Christmas music. So we're going all in. And actually, listeners, if you like the songs we're playing, we have some Christmas playlists over on Spotify. You can just search for Relevant Christmas. And we have a few of them over there, so don't miss that. But it's good to be back with you guys. I missed you guys. I missed the last couple of shows because I was in Israel. So I'm excited to be back. And also, don't do great shows without me ever again, please.
Well, I wasn't here either. So
I know
people were holding down the fort without us.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of confused. Were there other shows recorded and released while Cameron was gone? Because because you cannot be talking about the ones we recorded and released.
I literally, Jesse, you know my policy. If I'm not on the show, I don't want to listen to it because I don't want to know if it's way better without me or way worse without me.
Yeah.
And, but Derek like hit me up like 12 times about the shows you guys did, that they were so great and so funny, top five ever, and just rubbed it in my face that you guys had the best time without me and Jamie. So.
I don't know.
Gosh, I'm sad I missed it.
I mean, I'll say this. Things got deep. I mean, passionate, controversial,
yes.
Mainly because we were trying to rank casual dining places like Olive Garden and Red Lobster to determine if they're actually money laundering schemes, because we can't figure out who's going there anymore. But it's the hard-hitting content people expect at the intersection of faith and culture. So, you know, while you were in the Holy Land, you know, re-examining the origins of our faith at the most sacred time of the year, we were trying to determine how unsanitary it is that people still throw peanuts on the ground at Texas Roadhouse. So we're both doing the Lord's work here.
I really thought post-COVID that they would end that practice, but nope, it's still going strong.
No.
Everybody just throw their trash on the floor.
Why you go to Texas Roadhouse? It's the only place you're allowed to throw trash on the floor. Like, that. Make no mistake. That's why if I go, that's the point. I don't really even care about the food as much as I care about throwing the shells on the floor.
Well, it's the only place adults are allowed to throw trash on the floor. Because let's be honest, our kids think every place is a place to throw trash on the floor. But yeah, adults.
Even the house.
Yeah.
It's a small act of adult rebellion that just feels good. Here, you clean this up. And it's just some, you know, poor person on the wait staff who's got to sweep up. It's like they're cleaning a feed trough after dinner. The other thing, too, it occurred to me, and I feel like we did almost two entire episodes about this, so I'm not going to belabor it. But I was thinking about the whole casual dining thing post-pandemic. It's been really great to be back out in the world for a while now, going to restaurants and things. But aren't sneeze guards the mask of the restaurant world? Like, are they doing anything? Like, you know, that little glass windshield over the buffet, I can stick my arm right in there and just scoop some macaroni. You're telling me that's keeping the germs? There's no way that's keeping germs out. It is just peace of mind. It is a fabric mask.
Do you put your hand under there and get macaroni?
How else do you get it? Yeah, Golden Corral. Yeah, I'm listening. Okay.
Jesse, if you're eating at a buffet, the sneeze guard is the last thing that you're worried about. Like, you have already thrown caution to the wind if you're eating at a buffet. Like, you've already thrown it to the wind. Like,
dude, I've told this story before, but I was at a Jason's Deli, which has a salad bar.
Yeah.
And we were all sitting there eating and looked at this lady who was doing a takeout canister on the salad bar. She worked her way down, filled it up to the brim, got to the pudding. And we sat there and watched her. She took the spoon, slopped some pudding on her plate, licked the ladle, licked the spoon, put it back in the thing, more pudding, lick the ladle.
Come on.
Put it back in the thing.
Come on.
Some old lady yelled out at her.
Come on.
Like, what are you doing? And like, and the lady looked like, what? Like, I do this. I just want to taste the pudding.
So
like,
gross. What in the world?
Caution is to the wind. You are playing Russian roulette with your life. You playing with your
this
health.
This summer, like, when we were on the cruise, some of our friends came to have breakfast. They sat down. They're like, you guys, you're not going to believe what just happened. We're like, what? Like, we're in the dining hall with 880 people. What could have happened? And they said they were getting some bacon and a woman's Band-Aid fell off her finger and landed in the bacon. And she just walked off and left it there. Y'all, that is so gross.
Hold on. Whoa. Time out. What? Because y'all know my thing about cruises. What cruise line is this?
That was Royal Caribbean. It does, you know.
No.
So it doesn't even matter what cruise. I'm not going, Cameron. I'm not going.
Royal Caribbean swiftly went to that tray of bacon and removed it for the sanitary well-being.
Reason 800,000, I'm not going on another cruise, dog.
I have a hot take right now.
All right.
I think in that scenario, the most ethical thing you can do is to leave the Band-Aid. And here's why. Okay? Because if you take the Band-Aid, if you remove it from, because at that point, once the Band-Aid is removed from the finger and falls into the bin of bacon, the entire bin is contaminated.
Right.
I think we can all agree
that's,
on that.
That's
right? Even not just the one it touched. The entire bin is a biohazard. So yes.
It's like a rat dropping.
For sure.
Yeah, the whole thing's gone. Yes. Not just what touched the rat dropping.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, you pull the Band-Aid out, okay, then, you know, there is some time that it's going to take you to go find an employee to let them know there's been a contamination, okay? Someone could be taking the bacon there. Unless you have someone standing guard and saying this bacon's been contaminated, the Band-Aid's been removed, then go get the employee. You see what I'm saying here?
Mm-hmm.
The most, because, and then if you tell the employee could just remove the remove the Band-Aid before word spread around the buffet,
a Band-Aid was in the bacon.
You could have like a pretty laissez-faire bacon attendant who's just like, I will remove the Band-Aid and the pieces of the bacon it touched, but other than that, it's fine.
No.
So what I'm saying is ethically, you leave the Band-Aid so everyone sees and the people are forced
this is what I'm
moment.
Saying.
Am
this
I
is what I am
I
saying.
Think you're right.
This is what I am saying. This is the only thing I'm asking. If I go on a cruise, is the only thing I can eat is a buffet? Or
no.
Is it stuff
no, there's
and that
there's dude. Restaurants that cost money though.
No. But there's a ton of restaurants that don't. There's the main food, the main banquet hall where they have a menu that you choose from and stuff. And that's included.
That's true.
They have a million options that are service oriented, non-buffet.
If you stay in a suite, you get to go to the special restaurant.
Okay.
Right. And if you want, walk up to the omelet bar. They'll make it in front of you and hand it to you. I mean, you don't have to like be out there with the commoners. You know, there's a plenty of options.
Hey, y'all know I'm black and bougie. Like the Migos said, it was bad and bougie.
Can we just acknowledge that Jamie's experience was in the suite? Just FYI.
I'm just saying.
It was in the suite.
If you're going to go, you're going to go. Like why? I'm not staying in a room without a window where I feel like I'm in a box.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
No, I had a balcony. I just didn't have the suite.
Jamie. So you got to go to the special place and they had Band-Aid bacon at the special restaurant?
No, that was it. That was with the commoners. That
okay.
was with the commoners.
With the peasants. I'm not going
in the hole with the working man.
No, I can't be with the peasants.
I want to be down by the boiler room with the working man, okay? I want to hear the real stories of the cruise. I want to be like an old pirate.
Speaking of like germs and stuff, and I know we have an amazing show to get to. We've had a bunch of birthdays this past month and a thought came to me. That we're still gathering with strangers around a birthday cake and letting them blow all their germs on the cake. And then we're like, pass me a piece. I'd love to have some of your germs.
Nope.
Yeah, after COVID
have
too.
Have not done it since 2015.
Oh, we did just the other day.
I don't eat birthday cake. I will serve it because my kids don't care. But I do not eat birthday cake because... Listen,
it's a weird thing.
I've seen some things.
Yeah, it's a weird thing.
I've
seen some things, and I'm not. I'm gonna tell you what my wife did. She's so germophobic. She put one little candle on my son's birthday cake, and then she gonna put a plate behind the candle so when he blow, it try to catch some of the spit, but it's still, you know, it's just it's on the cake, y'all.
You can't tell
it's what it is. Birthday cake is a COVID hat. Matter of fact, that's what COVID started. They say it was birthdays. Something in China. I believe it was birthdays. I ain't gonna hold you.
Guys,
it was an 8-year old.
I'm not gonna let COVID steal my joy. I'm welcoming, I'm letting everybody get a blow on that cake. I'm strengthening the immune system. I don't care.
I've been feeling that, baby.
Anything goes on your birthday cakes. You don't care what's on top. You're just going to enjoy it.
I don't care.
Hey,
I'm just saying, look, it's a wild world out there. I'm over the pandemic, you know? Like, I'm not going to let it ruin all the birthday
fun.
This
is like an after-hours conversation.
This is wrong. Yes, this is wrong.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. I'm just trying to celebrate.
Joe in store for you today, despite this inauspicious start.
In the name of Jesus, we gonna move on.
Just want to celebrate.
Drew Holcomb joins us later. You don't want to miss that. Also, we have your feedback at the end of the show. And stay tuned right now. Downtown Emily Brown joins us for Relevant Buzz.
Shake, 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 shake that gift I'm hoping that you got for me. You got for him was the last thing I need fits underneath the tree.
You're listening to Sugar and the Hi-Lows. The song is Shake That Gift. Well, today's show is brought to you in part by Crown College, a boldly Christian and academically excellent college providing a lifelong, authentic community. Crown offers on-campus, online, and graduate programs, 18 NCAA Division III sports, international service opportunities, and a vibrant student life. Discover why Crown College is ranked top 3 in America for online Christian education. Visit crown.edu today. Okay, it's time for
Relevant Buzz.
Please welcome to the show our very own editor downtown, Emily Brown, telling us what's happening at the intersection of faith and culture this week. Hey, Emily.
Hey, y'all.
Are you home for the holidays right now?
I am. I'm staying at my aunt's house. She's visiting her kids. Oh. And so my parents are in the process of moving. So they're in a small apartment. So I have a nice house to myself this week.
Ooh, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's lovely.
It is fun. My aunt, I love her, but she does have the home decor of a Southern Christian woman. So it's been interesting vibes in the house.
What does that mean?
What do you mean, like bless this house type, like Hobby Lobby signs? Like, what
lots
are you talking
of,
about?
Like every corner, there's a new cross. Lots of
like faith, you don't have
freedom.
To read your Bible because it's just on the walls.
Yeah, right, there's like scripture on mirrors. She does.
Good
she
for
did
her.
Put out
Good
some
for her.
Thanksgiving decor. So there's a sign that says "Gobble till you wobble." That one's fun.
Good. I like her already. Let me ask you this, Emily. I'm going to ask about a couple items. Okay.
Gobble okay? to you wobble.
Real talk, and I'm not throwing your aunt on the bus, but I know this type of decorator. Mm-hmm. Is there in probably the guest bathroom, but it could be in any, a little basket beside the toilet with books, and one of those books is the Prayer of Jabez? Yes or no?
I don't think it's in the bathroom, but I do think it's in the living room.
No.
Okay.
That's a bathroom book.
So she got all this stuff. She got all this stuff from Hobby Lobby, right?
Oh, easily.
100%.
Yeah.
Or okay. Mardell's Christian bookstore.
Well, listen, I'm going to tell you this. If she got it from Hobby Lobby, you probably need to do some exploring because she may have an artifact in there that's worth millions of dollars.
So an artificial artifact, a replica. Yeah. Nah. Is this the Dead Sea Scrolls?
How many people right. over the course of the years have learned about expanding their territory because they just got it, you know, ate something bad and we really had some time to kill? And
they had a good 12 minute reading
session. We're just exploring the reading material.
Yeah. Like, that is true. That's a good thought.
I'm claiming that territory. How many little shelves with precious moments? Can we ask that real quick? Precious moments.
I think
shelves?
Those are just on the mantel place above the fire.
Yeah. Oh, she's got them in the prime position.
Yeah. Wow.
You got to see.
Wait,
those.
Are there scenes? Are there scenes being played out or are they just random statues?
I'd have to go check. I think there's just multiple little things.
Is your aunt listen to the Relevant podcast? She's going to think no, you're throwing her under the bus.
She's not okay. Target.
I don't know if she knows what a podcast is.
She doesn't know what a podcast is.
She's like, Emily, what do you do for a job?
She doesn't
know. I'm on the radio. I'm on the radio, Nancy.
Are there any blankets in the house? Are there any blankets in the house that have hand-woven Bible verses or scripture references?
100%.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She's a quilter. So I come from a family of quilters. Obviously. I do know how to quilt, actually. The hidden talent of mine.
Preach the gospel at all the times. Quilted. When necessary, use a hand-stitch quilt with extended Bible verses. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
The best is like just the random verses.
How many Kincaids are in the house? Thomas Kincaid paintings, painter of light.
Give us a Kincaid to non-Kincaid art ratio for the home.
I don't think she has a Kincaid, actually.
I mean, they are a little pricey. I mean, they don't sell them at Hobby Lobby.
But I am looking at a picture of, like, literally right here, is a picture of some fruit with the fruit of the spirit verse underneath it.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
That's so good. Yeah. I like that.
Good reminder.
For sure.
So, all right. What's happening this week, Emily?
Okay. Yes. Not talking about my aunt anymore. Okay. This is actually sort of like a developing story, but I think it's a really important one to talk about. Maybe by the time this comes out, some more things will happen. But for right now, Letitia Wright, who is the star of the new Black Panther film. Hopefully you've seen it. It's really great. She has been getting a lot of buzz for a potential win at the Oscars just for her role as Shuri in Wakanda Forever. But recently an article came out titled How Personal Baggage Will Impact Oscar Chances. And it listed a lot of different people in the industry who have had various sort of scandals, mostly accusations of abuse and sexual misconduct. So there's people like Brad Pitt, Woody Allen, Roman Polanski. And then Letitia Wright was also named because 2 years ago, she made some pretty controversial comments about anti-vax fake news. And she called out the Hollywood Reporter because she apologized when that happened. And she addressed it, has stayed silent since then, moved on. And yet there's still people in the media that are bringing it up and trying to sort of paint her in this way. And she called them out and said that.
Kind of like the Chris Pratt stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she just called them out and was like, that's not right. Like, I've apologized. A lot of the other people on the list have barely acknowledged it and definitely not apologized. And so it's an interesting, you know, part of cancel culture where, you know, people tried to cancel her, but she did, I would say, the right thing. And she addressed it, apologized, and tried to move on. But there is something about our culture that just keeps bringing this back up. And so I just think it's interesting that she decided not to stay silent about it. I don't think she needed to stay silent. I think it was good that she spoke up about it.
I agree.
Yeah, it's tough to argue with the internet. Like when Chris Pratt got labeled, he just kind of like went away and let the narrative balloon. And now he's finally years later saying, yeah, that what, you know, like it's just tough. Like if you act defensive, then they pounce even harder. So the natural inclination is to just like take it, but then the narrative kind of like solidifies. And so it's like, I'm glad she's pushing back and saying like, let me be me. Don't label me, you know? So good for her.
Yeah. And especially for, look, I mean, you know, she's an actress. It's not like she's running for political office here. Like she's entitled to have opinions about, you know, just like anyone. I guarantee you her opinions, even though they're probably unpopular among some segments, are the same type of opinions expressed during, you know, any sort of kind of political or social commentary. You're going to get ideas on kind of all sides of the spectrum. Just because someone happens to be in movies, I think they should be extended some degree of ideological grace, especially if you're not saying anything like hateful or harmful. It's like, come on, we can't expect every person who's labeled a celebrity to fall in perfect ideological alignment with whatever happens to be kind of the most accepted viewpoint on every issue. It's like, come on, you know, let's not take away like the fact that she had an opinion at one point that some people maybe find unpopular. How does that make any difference whether she should be awarded for a performance in a film that has nothing to do with that?
Right.
You know, like it's like, you know, no other field does that really kind of apply. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I was up for, you know, like if the Small Business of the Year award was going to my local mechanic, but it's like, oh, but did you know at one time he questioned whether he should get a booster or not. It's like, give me a break. What does that have to do with him,
exactly,
you know, winning the small business award? You know, like, I think, you know, let's have a little more grace with people, you know?
Yeah,
you know?
I think this is the problem with the capitalism of media too, like in a sense, because these guys are just looking for clicks. Like, why would you bring something up? Like, I don't know if it's, I'm not saying it's a problem because, hey, I obviously I'm a capitalist, I'm a business owner, entrepreneur, whatever, but it's like, that's the problem with media in general as of right now. It's like, you have to have so much content that even if there's not any real controversy, you kind of have to drum it up for some people. Not the relevant, because relevant, we, you know what I'm saying? That's not what we do here. Just letting you know that. You know what I'm saying? We try to stay above
unless
board.
You drop a Band-Aid in the bacon bin, then we're going to have...
then we're going all in.
Do the ethical thing and just leave the Band-Aid.
But, yeah. I mean, we've established it's 2 years ago. All of us were confused during COVID, and there were so many different narratives. Mm-hmm. But the woman apologized, said she was sorry, did what she needed to do. She actually got vaccinated and delivered an amazing performance. So why in the world would we even make something like that be in jeopardy over a person that just was like, yo, I'm confused. I don't necessarily know what's going on. I think these ideas might make a little sense. I'm exploring that. I think we have to, just as humans, have to start giving each other a chance to be able to think and evolve and grow and not do it in such a way that is so devastating. Like, yeah, you say something evil, something racist, something sexist or misogynistic, say something that would, you know what I'm saying, would hurt someone. Then yeah, I could understand that. But someone trying to figure out what to do with a vaccination for their body, they shouldn't be scrutinized, especially when they say, okay, yeah, maybe this what I posted may not have been, you know, may not have been a good opinion. So I'm taking that back and I'm correcting course. Like, that's all we can ask from people. We're all human. Nobody's perfect.
And I think you know, she even pointed that out, that, you know, it was not fair for her anti-vax comment to be placed on the same level as someone who has these very abusive allegations against them. Because like you said, you know, it's, you know, an anti-vax comment, that's really, if you're anti-vax, that's really only affecting you, you know, to an extent. Whereas like an abuse allegation, you've hurt someone else. And so it's like, you need to be like held, I don't know. It's, she pointed it out and just said like, you know, this is really, she was very, I would say rightfully harsh with, The Hollywood Reporter, just saying this is very vile and very disgusting. And you could just tell she was upset too, because clearly, you know, Wakanda Forever was such an important film for her. It meant so much to be able to do that kind of in memory of Chadwick Boseman. And so then for people to be bringing up these comments she made, she's also very young. I do want to clarify that too. You know, she was probably early 20s when she said exactly. those comments. The amount of things I said in my early 20s, we don't need to talk about that on the internet. So
facts.
She deserves a lot of grace and a lot of forgiveness. And I think it is important that, you know, if someone apologizes and tries to correct things, we have
Emily, I screenshot our staff chat, because what you say sometimes is egregious.
He's been texting a lot of it to me.
I have a special file
that I can back this up. It's shocking.
But Emily, you made a great point, but I do want to clarify, you did say in passing that people who are anti-vax are only hurting themselves. I have a friend who's anti-vax and then spread COVID to 73 people. So, that's a touchy thing to, you know what I'm saying? So,
but you can spread COVID with the vaccination. So you can't do, no, let's not do that one. Come on.
I didn't want that statement in passing to inflame any listeners. I was just saying, I do want to acknowledge that there's no right or wrong there. It's all a risk. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. It's risk across the board.
I'm the only one here who hasn't had COVID. So y'all,
you've never had COVID.
I haven't had COVID.
It's awesome.
Never had it. It traveled internationally.
It just means you're lucky and you're introverted.
No, I was driving to work this morning, listening to the Daily, and they were talking about all the flu and everything that's going around. And then I was thinking to myself, do I know anyone that hasn't had COVID? And now I know. Cameron.
I also have not had COVID.
Either has Jason or Emily. Wow, I've had it twice.
That's awesome. Emily, how many kids you got?
Zero.
Jason?
Zero.
There we go. All right.
Dude, Cameron, no, Cohen has never had it. Different. Cohen's you never had it.
Because look, Cohen is one of the coolest, cleanest kids I've ever seen. So we're gonna just—he's an anomaly. I go to Cameron's house and I'm like, you see Cohen's room, and like every freaking action figure is in a perfect place, and he has like these Lego things that he builds, and he's just so. Cohen's not even a kid; he's 36 years old. So you know,
I'll tell you this: he's neater than me, and I'm 39, and I regularly stick my head under the sneeze guard at Buffalo.
Nolan and Zane at the house, who, you know, I mean,
if something's gooey, your boys are gonna stick their fingers in it.
They're gonna stick their finger in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just those guys, right? It's like, hey, Dad, I found this thing. What is it? I have no clue. Oh, this is COVID in gelatin form. Okay, got it. It tastes like a gummy worm, Dad. You should try it. You know what I mean? Like,
this
you
is have literally that, a petri dish with the live
right,
virus.
Right, you know what I'm saying?
Like, one taste.
What we see is, unless you have a kid that's 36 in a 13-year-old body, or you don't have no kids, then you're not gonna get COVID. That's pretty much what it is.
You know what? I totally am a dork, because there's six people in my family. I've had COVID twice, but I have one kid who's never had it.
That is weird.
We've all had it, and one kid that never has.
There's studies coming out now about these people who just have this like immunity to it naturally. Uh-huh. And they're studying. They're studying them. Like, what is it that their bodies did differently, you know? So
they're going to survive the zombie apocalypse. That's what it is.
You can give your body to science, Cameron.
Hey, I will keep this podcast going through the zombie apocalypse. You guys can count on me. We're just going to power through it.
But the other thing, to your point, Emily, and to Derek, what you're saying, there is like a hard line where when you're saying something legitimately, you know, that's hateful or you know, all those categories that Derek mentioned. But sometimes it's just like, look, I am just tired. It's just exhausting to be constantly worried about what I got to be outraged about, who I got to be outraged at. And it's like, look, man, people, I'm living my life. You guys are living your life. Yeah. Like, let's have a little bit of grace here and not have to police everything everybody's ever said.
Yeah.
Just to manufacture some sort of controversy. Like, come on now. Like, because you don't want to live no one wants to live their life like that, you know? Like, and I'm not just talking about celebrities. I'm talking about personal relationships too, family and friends.
Facts.
You
know? Yeah. I think culture is having outrage fatigue right now. It was an intense couple of years. People are ready to just, can we celebrate the holidays? Can we just not make everything, you know, we're all angry about everything all the time. And, you know, pendulum swing where there's a balance in the middle.
Good.
But,
I hope we stay fatigued. You know,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What else do you have, Emily?
I do want to talk about a new study that came out from Pew Research. They pulled together this comprehensive report on religious Americans' opinions on the intersection of faith and the environment in the U.S. And there are just two very interesting statistics that I want to talk about. So people who identified as highly religious Americans, 92% said that they completely or mostly agree that God gave humans a duty to protect and care for the earth. 92%. That's a huge number. On the other side, 42% agreed that climate change is a serious problem. So I would like to know, why do we think that we need to take care of the earth, but we don't agree that there is like any issues going on?
I can tell you from dinner holiday conversations with my extended Fox News watching family that they do love God's earth, but they will cite the fact that there was an ice age and there was a this, and like weather pattern reporting has only been 100 years, and we don't know if this is actually a natural up and down or whatever. They just refuse to acknowledge the Al Gore scenario that our industrial revolution and carbon emissions is changing the atmosphere. They're like, we don't know what happened for millennia before we started tracking the weather. And so they just don't take it seriously. That's the difference. They aren't saying that it's not hot and that's not a bad tsunami and that's not a bad hurricane. They're saying, you know, it's a seesaw. The earth has always done this and it'll course correct like it always has. That's what they say.
So. Do they believe that we had semi trucks and factories during the ice age?
They say there's other sources of methane. There's other things. The earth always adapts. The earth always heals itself and moves.
It's going to adapt by killing the humans. That's what it's
going to do. I get killed off the dinosaurs. I'm going, you're talking, you want extinction? Yeah. Like, it's gonna this adapt. Isn't a good point of reference. Yeah, I know.
Hey.
But they don't hear it, man.
Yeah. I think, too, it's hard for people because it's not right now. It's not here and now. Yeah. And so today we're fine. Tomorrow we'll be fine. Probably in our lifetime we'll be fine. But then you're talking two generations, you know,
it's
and
faster
then
than
it's
that.
A whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but it's still like, it doesn't feel, I don't know, maybe just for me, it doesn't feel urgent. Like nothing is new in my world today that wasn't here yesterday as far as climate. Now I can see it and I have a brain and all the things. But I think that too is like, you're asking people to really, really care about something that is going to affect their grandkids. And I think that's hard for people.
Well, the irony of it is like, I grew up, I can't speak for everyone here, but I grew up in an evangelical culture that really embraced like what they call Pascal's wager, which is, well, you might as well, you know, say the sinner's prayer, because what if you're wrong? What the stakes are eternal, yeah, which is a terrible, terrible reason for, dedicating your life in service of the gospel of, hey, this just in case get out of jail free card. But the same logic applies. Like the stakes of not doing anything are the destruction of humanity and an uninhabitable earth, right? Like, if we just collectively all kind of clean up our consumption habits, what's the downside? You know what I mean? Like to me, it just seems like even if you are skeptical of, you know, what is largely considered the scientific consensus, what's the downside of just trying to, you know, like I said, to have cleaner consumption and not being reliant on a finite resource like fossil fuels? Like to me, that seems like, do you just want to pollute the air out of political principle now? You know what I mean? Like sometimes to me, it's like,
it makes no sense.
Yeah.
All right. What else do you have, Emily?
Last thing I want to talk about is there was a box office number that came in last week for the previous weekend that was really interesting and we really want to highlight it. The Chosen, which is a series about Jesus and the life of his disciples. It's a television series. They did a special theatrical release of their season 3 premiere. The first 2 episodes, you could go see them in theaters. And it did incredibly well at the box office. It pulled in a little over $8 million. Which is very impressive. It wasn't at every theater, but I believe it was around like 2,000 theaters across the country. But still, it pulled in that much money and it was the second highest grossing new movie for the weekend. So there was one movie called The Menu that beat it out. It pulled in $9 million. So it was very close that it was almost the number one new movie for the weekend. And it did beat out other new movies. So it's just really impressive that this special event of a faith television series that's actually not even on a major streaming channel. You can only watch it on the Angel Studios app, which is
and Apple TV and Roku.
I think it's on Amazon now.
Yeah, and Amazon. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, how is it? Amazon?
Yeah.
You can watch on Amazon now.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
But it's free everywhere. It's available for free. Never underestimate the power of Emily's aunt and her church friends buying a whole bunch of tickets to go out and make a statement at the theater.
Oh, I'm almost positive she went and saw it.
Absolutely.
I wanted to go see it. I just couldn't fit it in, but I really wanted to go see it. And this, I'm really excited for them. This makes me feel like proud of this whole thing that they're doing over there at The Chosen. It's great.
Chosen is very well done. Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks, Emily.
Very well done.
There's a lot more that's happening at the intersection of faith, culture, justice, life. We're covering it every day at relevantmagazine.com. Make it part of your web browsing habit. All right. Thanks, Emily.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Stay tuned. Up next, Drew Holcomb joins us.
Slide up in the room like I was Santa. What? My bad, just excuse my country grammar. Brother pulled up in a Charger, but he drive it like a Phantom. Grateful on my bag and inside I got the cannon, but not that type of cannon. Christmas in the sticks with all my folks. Gather around the fire cause it's cold. Grandma making magic on the stove. Celebrate the lamp, the heat of gold.
Yeah,
Gilly. Christmas in the sticks with all my folks.
Christmas Eve, and I'm trying to get the treat lit. Trying to sleep, but the devil trying to sneak this. Told my baby that I need that and I need this.
You're listening to No Big Deal. The song is Christmas in the Sticks. Well, today's guest is Drew Holcomb. His band, Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors, have just dropped some new music, including a single about gratitude. How fitting, considering Thanksgiving was last week. He sat down with Emily to share what he's been up to since we last caught up with him and why it's important to focus on expressing gratitude to others now instead of later. Here's our conversation with Drew Holcomb.
Well, I am really glad to speak with you about your new song, Gratitude. It's a wonderful song, by the way.
Thank you very much.
I would love to know, what was the story or inspiration behind it?
Yeah. So I wrote the song with my friend Catch Secor from Old Crow Medicine Show. And it was right around this time last year, or maybe the week before Thanksgiving week. And we saw each other in line dropping our kids off at school and said, what are you doing tomorrow? You want to write a song? You know, it's like, it's kind of how Nashville works sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I keep a journal of sort of key words or phrases of things that I wanted to write about. And for me, gratitude in general has been sort of a working state of mind that I adopted in 2017. I came out of a really bad hospitalization that set me back in terms of just my point of view. And 2017, that was Christmas of 2016. And so coming out of it, 2017, I just had a really hard year. And I was on the road and I had first time I ever had a panic attack, and which was strange for me because I'm usually a pretty like well-ordered individual. Anyways, gratitude was like the way I sort of fought through that. I literally had to wake up every day and sort of meditate, pray, list through however people want to use that terminology, but the things I was grateful for, you know. And so I was telling Ketch a little bit about that backstory, and because gratitude was a word that I had on this journal that we were looking for like song ideas, and he's like, man, I just love that. Let's write a song called Gratitude. So we started with the chorus and had this big sort of, you know, beautiful melodramatic chorus, and then built the verses about sort of these little photographic, I don't know, visions, you know, light in the morning, coffee in my cup, etc. And then the pre-chorus was sort of meant to bring some sort of a sea change to that. Like, you know, these things aren't a given, just a reminder that things can be taken away. And there's that line too in the second verse, all that gets taken and all that remains, just wanting to like be honest about the fact that some of the things that you can be really grateful for can also be taken away from you. And sometimes it makes them even more meaningful when they're gone. But yeah, that's sort of where the song came from. And I immediately started playing it out and got just a great response. I think vocally it's a new spot for me to sort of, I didn't really think of myself as a singer until probably 7 or 8 years ago, even though I've been doing this for almost 20 years. And I really leaned into getting better at becoming a singer, not just a songwriter. And really love where the song sort of allowed me to challenge myself and sort of, you know, go to some places that I would have been afraid to go to earlier.
Family, singing in the kitchen. Family, running through the yard. Family, going on vacation. On a credit card.
What are the ways that you practice gratitude daily now?
Deep breaths. Try to go on a daily walk of some sort. Try to, when my day gets chaotic or when curveballs come, try to have a little bit of humor at it instead of being overwhelmed, you know, because life is busy and there's deadlines and there's financial stress, and we have 3 children, so there's always like curveballs, and so I just try to like learning to laugh, you know, in the midst of them. That helps me find gratitude. And then I think just people in general, surrounding myself with people that I love and that bring out the best in myself, and then hopefully I bring out the best in them. I think those are sort of active ways that I try to practice gratitude.
Take a few chances. Few worthy romances. Go swimming in the ocean on
is dead. Don't listen to critics. Stand up and
back. How do you feel like you have changed over the course of your career? Like since your beginning to where you are now?
Wow, so much has changed. I mean, like the earlier, when I first started out, I had this sort of stern Memphis style contrarianism of like, I'm not going to be like anybody else. I'm going to do my own thing. And I don't want to sound like anybody else. And Nashville's terrible and I don't want to move there. And there was also that attitude in the studio was like, hey, you know, whatever it was is what it is. And now I realize like, well, I actually can work on it and make it better. You know, there's a reason they call it practice. You know, it's like you want to get better at something. And so I think I've just, and then my songwriting is just eight. I mean, as you get older, your perspective changes. I feel like that's sort of the older you get, the less you know. And I love that. I feel more at peace with myself and the world than I ever did as a 24-year-old. Now, if I had had that perspective as a 24-year-old, I may not have had the ambition and the gumption to give this thing a try. So I'm grateful for all of those seasons because they're all different. And so, you know, I'm kind of all of that change and evolution over 20 years of making music is I'm grateful for it because you wouldn't have one without the other, I think is sort of what I'm getting at. But and then the practice, so many practical changes. I mean, when I started, it was still the CD era. You know, it was Napster had just started, you know, so went through the transition from the CD era to the download era, from the download era to the streaming era, and in the middle of this, the vinyl sort of resurgence, and just the way that people consume music has changed so much over my career. But at the end of the day, people still come back to songs, and well-executed recordings of good songs can, you know, stand the test of time and stand the test of sort of consumption changes in the sort of marketplace. But at its core, I think the main thing that hasn't changed for me is the love of the song. And that'll always be my sort of creative guiding force, is trying to write great songs that move people and help people make sense of their days. And yeah, that's what music always was for me, and that's what I want it to continue to be as I continue to make it.
That was Drew Holcomb. Make sure to check out their new music wherever you stream.
It's a marshmallow world in the winter. When the snow comes to cover the ground, it's the time for play. It's a whipped cream day. I wavor it all year round. Those marshmallow clouds being friendly in the arms of the evergreen trees. And the sun is red.
You're listening to The Lone Bellow. The song is Marshmallow World. Now, I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, but all of these songs are part of the Very Relevant Christmas playlist on Spotify. We do a different kind of thing every year, and this year, we went all out. The Very Relevant Christmas playlist is 325 hand-selected songs, indie artists, Christian artists, some R&B. It's amazing stuff. No Mariah Carey, and none of the classics. Now, hey, time and place for classics. I love me the classics. I love me the Frank Sinatras and stuff like that. But this playlist is stuff that's you probably haven't heard. It's a great shuffle to just put on in the background or put on while you're driving around this holiday season. A Very Relevant Christmas on Spotify.
Well, Relevant has a lot happening this year, and we don't want you to miss a thing. Make sure to sign up for our newsletter right there on the front page at relevantmagazine.com, and we'll send you our top five trending stories into your inbox every weekday. We'll also send you a weekly podcast newsletter with the latest episodes, some fan extras, and first peeks at the new shows that we're going to be rolling out throughout this year. Make sure to sign up. It's the best way to keep in touch with everything we got going on.
Well, normally right now, we would have your feedback, but because we're recording this podcast right before Thanksgiving, we're a little short on time, so we're just going to have to cut it. If you want to check out all the answers to last week's question of the week, which was, if you could see Netflix give $100 million to any project, what would it be and why? There were a lot of replies. Just look at all the mentions over at the Relevant Podcast Twitter account. Couple updates. Make sure you head over to relevantmagazine.com every day to check out all of our exciting new content. We're publishing 10 to 15 items a day covering the intersection of faith, life, culture, and justice. You can also click on the magazine tab right there at the site to see our fall digital issue featuring conversations with Dayglow, Regina Hall, and T. Wright, MIA, and many more. Also, follow us over on Instagram or at Relevant Magazine, Twitter or at Relevant, and Facebook Relevant to make sure you don't miss out on anything we're putting out. We're doing a lot. Also, hey, if you're still listening, you might like the show. If you like the show, tell people about it. Share the content. We'll be putting video clips up on IG and on Reels and on TikTok and stuff. We're kicking that up here next week, I think. And if you share it on your stories and rate it and review it wherever you listen, it helps the algorithm and we love seeing the feedback. Okay, on that note, we'll wrap it up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Jamie Ivey.
I'm Derek Mining.
We'll see you next time. Have a great week, everyone.
Listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
I want to be down by the boiler room with the working man, okay?
Relevant Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.